the synth stylings of Kraftwerk. When that song Autobahn came out in 1974, and yes, I was around to remember when it came out then, synthesizers were the cutting edge in music technology. They really were a rarity, but not so today. Synthesizers are everywhere in pop music, from the top 40s to indie synth pop. You've definitely heard synthesizers. Maybe you've even seen them in action. But do you know how they work? Yeah, a toy company called Little Bits wants to show you. They've created a do-it-yourself synth kit, a tiny synthesizer you can make yourself, no electronics knowledge required, almost as simple as plugging together those Lego blocks. And just in case you thought you were too cool to play with toys, well, that isn't stopping comedian Reggie Watts. Reggie helped Little Bits develop their synth kit, and you might know Reggie from his TV show Comedy Bang Bang. Maybe you've seen his comedy performances where he improvises everything right there in the spot, songs on the spot using electronics. And he's right here on our stage, as somebody used to say, with us with his little thin synth, and we're going to talk about it. Welcome to Science Friday, Reggie.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Also here to demystify the synth is Paul Rothman. He's the product development manager at Little Bits and the man behind the synth kit. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Eric. Thank you for having me.
How did the idea come about for the kit?
I think, some of the idea came from just general knowledge that we had in the company, backgrounds in music. A couple of our engineers are music
majors. You grew up playing violin and piano?
No, that's actually Reggie. Yeah,
did.
I did study music here at NYU, specifically music technology and electronics. But a conversation that Reggie had with I at the TED conference last year, a combination with the Japanese company Korg, mm-hmm. reaching out to us, interested in seeing if there was something that we could do together, kind of set this whole kind of product in motion.
And Reggie, when did you discover an interest in synthesizers? Having that musical background, was it a natural thing to get into?
I think it was. I always, ever since, as far as I can remember, I was always interested in little tiny gadgets that make sounds. And, I started with kind of acoustic-based artists like Ray Charles. But when Stevie Wonder, when you would hear sounds on the radio that were like computer robot sounds or Rocket, the song Rocket, I immediately was fascinated with the idea. And also the scene in Fame when the guy's unloading his synthesizer from the car as far as, like, I don't know what it does, but we're loading it into the school. And like, put that over here. Be careful with that. How huge and monstrous it was, and yet it produced all these incredible sounds. I loved the idea of harnessing a computer of sorts to make music.
I'm Ira Flato. This is Science Friday from NPR. Talking with Reggie Watts and Paul Rothman. How do you build electronics into your comedy act? How do you build it in there?
It's pretty standard. Robin Williams did it. No, I was in bands for a long time, and I became interested in affecting my own vocals. Actually, Jay Clayton, who lives mm-hmm. in New York, but she was my teacher in jazz at the time. A few other musicians were running their vocals, their voice through effects. I found that to be really fascinating. So the idea of controlling all the sounds that a sound engineer would do usually became fascinating to me. And then over time, I started learning about looping. And I'd already been involved with synthesis since high school when I had a Roland W30, which was the first music workstation sampler. And I started mixing the two together on stage because it allowed me to create broader, larger scale immersive ideas from just one person.
Mm-hmm. Paul, can you give us the basics of what a synthesizer is in a nutshell?
Sure. I mean, at the core of it, you have different circuits that are performing specific functions. So signal generators
your little bits right there.
All right. So in this case, I can connect an oscillator. And I can sweep through different frequencies here all the way down into a low frequency range, which is generally a different kind of thing, which is a controller. And I can change the timbre. So you've got different waveforms, so that would be an oscillator. And then you have things like a filter, which will affect the sound. So you've got controllers like a keyboard, a sequencer, things that modify the sound like a filter. You can include other things, other kinds of controllers, sample and hold functions, delays, things like that. And it's basically how you combined these different elements to kind of create an instrument that's unique.
And how were you able to make it so compact and so easy to build together like little building blocks?
That's kind of the magic of what we do at Little Bits itself, and a lot of that is really based on the technology that we have available. You know, 30 years ago, we didn't have components that were this small. We've got surface mount technology, and so we're able to pack a lot of electronic circuitry into a small package. But to make the system so simple and easy to use was just a lot of kind of planning and designing from Little Bits and from Korg.
Now you got about a dozen Little Bits there. What's the minimum number that you need?
The minimum number that you would need would be three in terms of the synth kit, because you need a blue module, which is power. You have a pink one, which is the oscillator, and then the output, which is a green module, is a speaker. So that's the minimum, and you can basically mix and match any number of different modules.
And how much do you have to know to just pick it up and put it together?
Yeah, I think, you know, people that have some sense of a synthesizer can just jump right in it. For people that need a little bit more handholding, the kit itself comes with a booklet that walks you step by step. Each module, what they do, kind of talking about the history of synthesizers, as well as the individual functions.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to twist Reggie's arm, I think, a little bit. It doesn't look like it needs much twisting. He's got all his equipment out in front of him, ready to play for us. So stay with us. Reggie's going to do a little synthesizing for us. When we come back, talking with Reggie Watts and Paul Rothman, our number 1-800-989-8255. We have more information about Little Bits on our website at sciencefriday.com. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Plato. We're talking this hour about synthesizers. Synths are all over pop music, but how do they work? Well, there's a new do-it-yourself synthesizer that breaks it down, and you can build one yourself. It's called Little Bits. Little Bits product manager, product development manager, Paul Rothman, is here. He helped develop Little Bits Synth Kit, which is a do-it-yourself DIY synthesizer. Comedian and synth enthusiast Reggie Watts. You might know him as the co-host of IFC's Comedy Bang Bang is here, and we've been promising it, and now I'm going to throw it over right here on our stage, Reggie Watts performing something that you don't know what you're going to do before you sit down?
You know, I wish I did. I wish I did, but I just didn't prepare, unfortunately.
Take it away.
All right.
Check 5, 2, 6, computer, 5, 2, initiate, right, 2.
That was great. I wanted more.
I was like, oh, well, one component was down, but it was okay. We made it happen.
Now, but if you go into a recording studio, you have to have something planned. Don't they want to know what's going to be coming? If you're doing an album or something?
No. It's for me, I had a solo album I put out in 2003. And I just went into the studio with Steve Fisk, who's like a huge synthesizer guy. And we just had all these. I just told him, I need a drum sound. He would like put up a drum sound. I'd do like the drum parts, and then I would like do the bass line. And then we'd just create a song like in half an hour. And then I would do, vocals over it. I just find it much easier to create in the spot. That way I don't have to rehearse.
Mm-hmm. And do you think you could do a lot of that stuff? You have your own little synthesizer here with the synth kit.
Think
it's possible to do basically all of that kind of stuff?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's just about recording and coming up with great sounds. So with little bits, the evolution of how to interface with the sounds. I mean, I'm kind of like, in a way, an amateur. I'm still learning about synthesis, and this kind of gives me a clearer idea because it's all mapped out. So I can actually go, oh, that's where they get that sound from. That's how that's able to be created.
Can you imagine if everybody could crowdsource this together and everybody have a band together and play all of this?
I think it's possible.
You guys are looking at each other like I hit a nerve or something.
It's like, hey, man, that's a good idea. A big worldwide jam session.
Wow.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Completely. I mean, the technology
It's possible to do that. The technology is there.
Absolutely. I mean, all of these things, with like high quality lines and, with like hardly any lag and delay, I mean, people can jam together now with pretty virtual ease. I mean, it's pretty incredible what you can do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure somebody's working on that. It's somewhere out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
You heard it first.
Yeah. Hi, guys. You heard it here first.
How does looping your voice work?
Looping is pretty easy. It's it's a machine that essentially records your vocal sounds. It really came from the early tape delay days, like with the Beatles, when they would experiment by stretching huge amounts of tape across the room and recording something, and then having it take a very long time for it to come back around and then hear it again.
Yeah.
So it came from echoing, but more specifically, looping records a chunk of audio or whatever information, and then. And then is able to repeat it over and over again consistently. And then you can add on top of it. So it enables you to very quickly generate something. Whereas like when you were hearing the performance with the synthesizer, it's an arpeggiator of sorts. And that is repeating over and over again. It's not technically looping. It's mm-hmm. it's actually just creating sounds with pulses. But looping is, I would say, probably more, I guess, in the recording room. So you record your voice, it repeats it. And I can record anything and then add that to the loop.
Yeah. Is there something a synthesizer can't do that you would like it to be able to do?
Synthesis has come such a long way. And also the definition of what a synthesizer, like pure synthesizer purists would say that monophonic synthesizers that are modular are true synthesizers, that polyphonic synthesizers aren't true synthesizers. I would say that the idea of having a computer be able to generate sound from numerical values is so advanced these days that many people don't even understand that when they're hearing a synthesizer on a modern pop music track, oftentimes it's an emulation of a synthesizer. It's not actually a synthesizer. It's a simulation of a type of synthesizer or a sound that a synthesizer made or a sample of a synthesizer being performed. There's so many variants to how computers can create. So in a way, we've kind of maxed it out. I mean, there's also a human perception level at which it just stops being relevant to our senses.
Until somebody comes along with something we never thought could happen.
Yeah, right? There are still some sounds that we haven't really mastered the synthesis. The human voice is extremely complicated.
Oh,
acoustic instruments like the saxophone are really rich in their harmonic.
Can you impersonate other instruments on there?
Impersonation is much better in the digital sort of realm. You can, with analog synthesizers and the different sorts of modules, you can, for example, using a sawtooth waveform, an envelope with kind of a slow attack and a slow decay, you can get stuff, and if I roll off the filter a little bit, maybe something that would be kind of like a string, like a cello or a violin, but it's a complicated process to emulate all the things that go into an acoustic instrument, bridge resonance from a violin and the sound of a bow striking the string. So Yeah. There's a lot of computation that can go into like really emulating an instrument. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something called attack, something decay. That shapes how the sound.
Right.
Works.
So I was just kind of demonstrating a little bit what that was like. No pun intended. Got me again. Yep. So the envelope, I can kind of. This is an envelope with a very short attack. So. The sound comes on instantly, so
fades quickly.
Yeah, and fades right now quickly. So this would be analogous to hitting a piano key and removing your finger very quickly. Whereas if you hit a piano key and kept your finger on there, it would be more like a short attack and a long decay.
It's like the pedal a little bit.
Right. Yes. So the string is allowed to vibrate, and in this case, we're doing that electronically. And then if I also bring the attack up. It's a slow rise and a slow fade as well.
Yeah. And what's the? I think people often confuse frequency and pitch.
Right.
What's the difference between? Demonstrate what frequency and pitch, if you can.
Well, the way that we would perceive it, it would be basically the same thing in the sense that frequency is how you would measure a periodic waveform. It's the number of cycles per second that you can record, but pitch is something that actually is particular to our brain, and it's how we perceive sound. So we can perceive a frequency, and that's the pitch. And so we say things like, okay, we have a low pitch or a high pitch, but that's something that's developed in our brains, and some people have a better sense of pitch than others.
Yeah.
You know, there's a concept of perfect pitch, which...
And relative pitch.
So, you know, people that are tone deaf have a poor sense of this
right.
versus trained musicians who have a very sharp sense of this.
Yeah. If you can hear, frequency, but you may not be able to pick out tonality. Hmm.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Reggie Watts, comedian, musician, filmmaker. He is the co-host of IFC's comedy Bang Bang. Paul Rothman, product development manager at Little Bits. He helped develop Little Bits' synth kit. Reggie, do the musicians understand what they're... How the instrument, the synthesizer they're playing with, or they don't have to know that.
You know, I think with something like Little Bits, you can have a very vague general knowledge, but it's really the practice of interfacing with it that you kind of discover things, which is probably the most important way to learn about something. But a lot of musicians don't necessarily know. They some people just learn it from other people, and they may not have actually studied the technical aspects of it. But as long as they know that, well, this knob tends to do this, and this knob tends to, over time, they'll have a general knowledge of it. But they could also master the instrument without actually knowing the technical aspects.
I'm now going to show you how old I am, because I'm going to use a term no one uses anymore. You know, you watch musicians, groups, bands are playing guitars, or they could be Dave Brubeck on his piano or whatever, and they get into this groove with their music.
Yeah.
Is it easy to do that with a synthesizer? As easy with something that is not really an instrument per se, that you know, but you're sitting there, and I noticed you grooving with I was when you were playing that music.
Yeah.
Is it a little harder, or is it doesn't matter once you get into it?
Well, I mean, the thing about like humans performing rhythm and tone and texture and timbre and all that, it's like there are these micro subtleties that people are responding to. So there's kind of like a deeper human level, organic level to it. But computers or synthesizers have kind of an organic element to them, in that there are aberrations that will occur. But in general, the way that you condition a sound, and even though it's repeating over and over again, especially like with an arpeggiator or something like that, there is a groove to it. I mean, as heard by you were playing Kraftwerk earlier. Or even early industrial artists like Front 242 and so forth, they were just running sequences. But there's still a funkiness to it. And that's what I really enjoy about computers. It's like sometimes they're so angular and so square.
Do they have a personality?
I think so. Synth enthusiasts, you know, where it's like Roland, you know, the Roland 106 is like, that's the one, or like the Andromeda, or, you know, whatever synthesizer you can think of, early modular synths, you know, synth emulators, the Mini Moog, they all have different characteristics, because like what Little Bits does is it shows you all the different aspects of the modular aspect of synthesis. It really depends on the quality of the components that you're using, the order in which you place them, and the amplifier. There's so many elements that go into making a cohesive unit that by the time you're done with it, it kind of becomes its own character. Even the little bits has the same components.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, if you got these people together, which we were kind of talking about a meetup at some point in the future, you're gonna hear the differences that in all of those different kits, even though it's same, comes from the same place.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR. Talking with Reggie Watson and Paul Rothman about synthesizing music. Paul, let me ask you, what about what's timber?
So timbre actually is.
I pronounced it wrong.
Yeah, it's a confusing
I was asking
spelling
about the wood.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, timbre is basically the quality of the sound, and timbre is what would differentiate your voice from my voice or a flute from a saxophone. So it has to do with kind of the tone quality of a sound source. And so in the terms of a synthesizer, you know, we can listen to a square wave and then listen to a sawtooth. And they have two different sorts of characters to them. And then you can adjust that timbre more by doing filtering. So in this case, there's a lot more higher order harmonics in the sound. And if I just roll them off, the sound becomes less bright. And so that's basically kind of the differences. It's the differences between sound quality and perception, I would say.
How much am I, as I getting, excuse me, as I get older, I can't speak anymore. Mm. That's one thing, but I can't hear those high notes anymore. As a musician, do people start missing those sort of things?
Yeah.
Do you notice that they're gone? And
yeah, it's something that you worry about, you know, someone who loves sound. I think synthesis in general kind of allows you to still hear some of those notes because the sound that's created from synthesizers is so strong and static to a certain degree. It's different, like if someone's singing, there's a complexity to what's going on, and it might sound lower quality if it's like a rich sound because you're not able to hear as many of the variants. But synthesis, you can still kind of hear everything.
Yeah.
I mean, in this sort of audio range that we're working with, most people, but as people do get older, the frequencies that they can hear tend to drop down. You know, so you might be losing some information in the upper.
Although
range.
I will say that Neil Young, when he I ended up in this weird situation where I ended up in Neil Young's car, and he had this new I think it's called Pono, I think is the name of this audio format that he's coming up with.
Uh-huh.
But he was talking about how he thought that he was losing his hearing. But from listening to his old favorite recordings, because MP3s, you know, were so compressed that he was missing out a lot of the audio information. But when he listened to it at full resolution, like from the studio, as though you were at the studio session, they had the final mix and they were like, here, put on these headphones. You're going to listen to it straight from the source. He was able to hear again. So sometimes it has to do with the quality of the sound.
Yeah, he's probably listening on vacuum tubes.
Most likely.
In his car.
Yes, in his car, with a stuffed gopher on his dashboard.
No, but that's a very good point, because, you know, there are people growing up today that think that MP3 is high-quality music.
Yes, I know. It's absolutely incredible.
And they've never heard the original stuff and where all the harmonics and everything are gone.
No, they're like, oh, what about, oh, I was missing all this? Oh, wow, it's a very open sound? Oh, I thought it was really small and had a sound at the edge of the hearing curve. I don't know.
Well, we got about 30 seconds left. You want to plug something? You're going to be appearing someplace?
Or? Yeah. Am I? You know all my schedule, Paul. No, I am. I'm about to film season 3 of Comedy Bang Bang. I'm working on some video projects. I'm working with Jash.com, which is me, Sarah Silverman, Tim and Eric.
Wow.
Michael, Sarah. And we all do our separate videos, kind of like a YouTube network. So I'm making videos for Jash. And I'm going to be working on an album, I think, next year with all my favorite producers.
That's terrific.
So a lot of stuff.
You'll be busy. And you, Paul?
Yeah, so you can pre-order the synth kit. The next run that we're doing will be available in January, so you can pre-order at littlebits.cc.
It's like a lot of fun. We played with it in our office. It was terrific.
Great to hear.
Yeah. All right. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today. Reggie Watts, comedian, musician, and filmmaker, co-host, as he says, of IFC's Comedy Bang Bang, and Paul Rothman, product development manager at Little Bits. he helped develop Little Bits with Reggie, a little bit of input there. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a happy
Thank you very much.
And healthy holiday season.
You as well.
BJ Lindemann composed our theme music, and we had help from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. I can't top any of the music we had here, so we'll just go out with our music from BJ. Have a great holiday. Happy holiday to you all. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.